cancer and colorectal cancer.
One of the most amazing scenes for us was filming her in her gym with her trainer, where she works out twice a week. She does a grueling one-hour workout without fail. She is and the workout involves, you know, planks, push-ups, medicine ball, the whole routine.
It's the new Jane Fonda workout video, I'm expecting to say.
85 is the new 45. Who knows? I mean, she is determined to keep herself in shape.
We have 10 seconds, Julie. What most surprised you in meeting Justice Ginsburg and doing this documentary?
You know, there are a lot of legends that have arisen about Justice Ginsburg over the past couple of years as she's become the notorious RBG, including the workout, including her long work hours. I think the surprise was that most of those legends are true.
Well, I want to thank Julie Cohen and Betsy West, directors and producers of the documentary RBG, which just had its world premiere here at the Sundance Film Festival. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host the class Hip Hop Past, Present, and Future, and Your Place in It with Mike Crenshaw on Saturday, January 27th at 4 p.m. at KBOO in Portland. This class will explore hip hop history locally and nationally, KBOO hip hop programming, how hip hop influences art, culture, and political consciousness, rhyme writing and production, and how liberation struggles have contributed to hip hop culture. Again, that's Hip Hop Past, Present, and Future and Your Place in It with Mike Crenshaw on Saturday, January 27th at 4 p.m. at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the new member orientation for the Urban League of Portland Young Professionals on Monday, January 22nd at 5 p.m. at the Kennedy School in Portland. Learn about the history of the Urban League and the Young Professional Committee, the activities of each of the groups, and how you can get involved. Again, that's the new member orientation for the Urban League of Portland Young Professionals, Monday, January 22nd at 5 p.m. in the Community Room at the Kennedy School, 5736 Northeast 33rd Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Portland.
You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO.FM. And I am Cecil Prescott, and I welcome you this morning, trying to do more things. So just as our theme music was coming on, my phone started ringing, and I couldn't find my phone, so I'm trying to find that to turn it off, and I have to begin. Let's just breathe and start today. Joining us this morning, I'm really glad to have with us again Douglas Troy of the Portland Underground Graduate School, and he's here to be like Moses and lead us to the promised land of financial freedom as the, you know, IRS is breathing down our necks as we prepare the April 15th deadline to file of federal taxes and waiting for that windfall we're going to get from the new tax bill. In the meantime, you might have some suggestions for us as we are on the way to find the the promised land as we wandering around in the wilderness.
In the consumerist wilderness.
Yeah. So, so you can, you're teaching a course with the Portland Underground Graduate School in February. Maybe just for those who are unfamiliar, tell us about what PUGS is and then we'll go into your course.
Sure. Thanks, Cecil. It's good to see you again. Portland Underground Grad School, PUGS, is a school for everyday life. It's the idea that the world's changing all the time, and your education that you got when you were a kid doesn't suffice you for the rest of your life. So lifelong learning at affordable prices. Our basic idea is that no one should have to go into debt to keep on learning, because learning is a human right.
Learning is a human right, which considering education in our society now is not necessarily a popular or well-received idea in terms of learning as a human right. So we finally have public education through secondary school, and then you're on your own for the most part.
Yeah, and I would say, Cecil, that our education systems are they're funded and powered by the system, mm-hmm. which means it has a particular ideology of power to it. Like, you know, what we learned in our history classes is not the history, or I would say is the history that power wants us to know.
Yes.
So the idea of PUGS is the community educates itself. And so you hear many more progressive, radical, and diverse voices when you get educated by the community as opposed to the institution.
And what I think some of the revolutionary things about PUGS is in terms of it's community-oriented, community-led, hearing from voices of people, sharing their skills and their interests, and at time and rate that people are able to participate in. And so each month there's courses offered.
Yes.
And in February you have a few, and including financial freedom.
Yeah. Can I tell everyone about our courses in February?
Yes.
In February we have Portland's African American Boys, How to Be an Ally. I'm doing a workshop on how to apologize, a 2-hour workshop on how to apologize. We have a course on crop diversity. A workshop on how to teach, and then a history of environmental justice in Portland. Wow. And everyone can find the courses on the PUGS PDX website. They can Google Portland Underground Grad School, or PUGS PDX is the URL. And the offer for PUGS is, our slogan is, this is half learning and half community. So if you bring a friend to class, you can use the coupon code You've Got a Friend. You can get 20% off for both of you.
Oh, amazing.
Thank you.
So as you want to make it as accessible to as many people, and offering certainly a variety of courses, but also ways in which people can participate.
Yes, and I would add that we have a radical pricing policy, which is, again, because we believe education is a human right, we allow people to come in at their hourly wage. Huh? So, because we believe that no one should have to go into debt to keep on going to school or to keep on learning. So, and we also believe that more diverse classrooms, more economically diverse classrooms, are better classrooms. So price is not an issue to come to PUGS.
Excellent. So go to PUGSPDX.com, hear more detail about the courses that are offered, and I'm sure you've been getting a lot of feedback from people who have participated. How long has PUGS been going on?
It's been going on for 3 years.
3 years, wow. So becoming an institution.
No, don't say that.
But in terms of your original vision, have that altered some as time has developed in terms of what you imagine it would be and how you have helped shape the school?
Yes, that's a fantastic question, Cecil. I think when I started Pugs, it was this idea that learning was fun. And so we just offered classes and all sorts of things, whatever people wanted to offer, because it came from the community. But now, after 3 years, what we focus on mostly is courses that create personal change in some manner. Because what we realized is people are seeking, they're seeking change from education. They're trying to be better citizens. They're trying to empower themselves. They're trying to get more informed about the city or the natural geography that they live in. So our big theme now is, how does each of these courses change you after 4 weeks? How do we get you to where you want to be?
Wow. And and in terms of how do the courses offer personal change in 4 weeks? So if someone has a proposal, that's part of the narrative or as they offer the course to talk about personal change. And how are the is there a committee that selects which courses are chosen? Or how does that work in terms of which are offered by Pugs?
Yeah. Well, you can look at our teaching page on the Pugs PDX website. Mm-hmm. But basically, we want people who have something that they're eager to share to the community. If their primary purpose is to make money, it's probably not the right fit because we can't guarantee money or revenue. What we do is we offer courses, and then the instructors gets half of the profits after expenses. So the profits come straight from tuition. So it depends how many students we get. It depends on how many scholarships we give. It depends on how the class fills, because I don't want to, my phrase is, I don't want to profit from people, I want to profit with them. So I get half and the instructor gets half. But I don't know how much we're going to make. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, we want people who have been part of the community. So we ask people to take a course before they offer a course.
Excellent. And is there a physical location? So the courses offered in various places throughout the region?
We are underground, Cecil. We are in community centers around the city.
I kind of like the idea of underground, but okay. In community centers throughout the city.
Yes.
And the course, Financial Freedom Course, now that's an online course. Is that something different than in the past?
Yes, this is our first online course. And the reason I've made this online is I've taught it six times already. I taught it six times last year. And what I realized is a lot of people were asking or saying, I really want to take this course, but Wednesday nights from 6:30 to 8:30 just doesn't work for me, but I really want the information. And so when we talk about access at Pugs, I realized that this course, in order to be accessible to people, and it's accessible to people outside of Portland too. So if you know anyone, audience that would want to take this course but don't live in Portland, they can take it as well. Accessibility meant that we had to offer the course at the times that people wanted. So it's online and on demand. So they have 2 months to finish 30 lessons, and each lesson takes 20 to 30 minutes apiece.
Oh.
But they can take it in their own time, and then to maintain the community and group learning aspect of Pugs, we have a discussion board, and you have to post your homework on the discussion board and interact with other students.
Well, that's That sounds intriguing, in, just in terms of the social dynamics of how that interacts. So this is the first time you're offering the course online, and you mentioned in terms of as a part of the results of the demands on the community. Is the course differed a little bit because it's online as opposed to physical live presentation and community discussion?
Yeah, this is the second time we're offering it. The second cohort goes from February 1st to March 31st, so you have 2 months to finish the 30 lessons. And it is different. It's different to take a course online with an online community where you don't see people's faces and you don't have direct discussions. But at the same time, because it is online, the curriculum is actually much deeper because I used to teach this live in four classes, and I was able to expand and deepen what the curriculum was once I could go online and make it 30 different short lessons.
You're listening to KBOO FM. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott. Today is January 22nd, and we're speaking with Douglas Hoy of the Portland Underground Graduate School, PugsPDX.com. We're talking about the courses, the opportunities that you have to participate as a participant. If you have thoughts or ideas about teaching a course, and if you would like to ask Douglas some questions, why don't you give us a call right now or live, and we'll take your call, and Douglas can respond to your inquiries. Our numbers here in the studios are 503-231-8187, and we'll talk with you. You mentioned, Douglas, you mentioned that the course is, you have 2 months to complete the course. Is there a second level course afterwards, or how?
Yes, there is Financial Freedom 2. This course that I'm teaching is called Financial Freedom 1. Mm-hmm. And Financial Freedom 2 goes into how do you create more income. So in the FIRE world, FIRE is a acronym for financial independence, retiring early. In the FIRE world, there's this idea that in order to reach financial independence and retire early, you need both great defense and great offense. Great defense meaning you have to radically reduce your consumption. We talk a lot about that in Financial Freedom 1, about the emotional scripts and the compulsion to consume in our American society. That's Financial Freedom 1. It's mostly about consumption and about creating a budget and creating a plan for the future, and having a target date of and planning out month to month how much you need to save to hit your target date of financial freedom. But then Financial Freedom 2 is about how do you create great offense, because I think most of the people that take Financial Freedom 1 and most of the people who listen to KBOO, I think are people who actually play pretty good defense. But the issue is a lot of people don't know how to play great offense.
I'm just fascinated by not only the terminology but also in terms of defense and offense. And as you were speaking in terms of leading up to this place and the analysis of looking at how consumption and how that plays a role in who we are and making those type of decision, I'm wondering if generally, I've seen either through the mail or ads on television, come join our seminar and, we'll feed you and a winner will get a computer, and either you become a real estate entrepreneur or know how to make money really easy, you know. And then I suppose once they suck you in, I'm just assuming, you know, you hand over some more money and they'll give you the secret to wealth. I would suspect there's a different philosophy in terms that you offer as opposed to those other types of people who are seeking people to enter, participate in the opportunities they have for so-called financial freedom.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because those workshops and courses, I feel like there's a bit of a snake oil hucksterism to them, yes. Right? Like you will fulfill all your dreams and you'll make, you know, 6-7 figures in real estate if only you learned our secrets. Yes. And I feel like with Financial Freedom One, I mean, one of the things we talk about is you know all this stuff already. You know that you need to save and you need to do it systematically. You need to invest some portion of your current income for the future. And so one of the things we talk about is this is like common sense stuff that we've just never done. And I talking about like our institutional learning that we got as kids, how come none of us got financial literacy in school? Like, to me, that's either derelict or intentionally, I don't even know what the word is, but how do we not get financial literacy in a capitalist society in school? Like, they either want us to be subjects or they just completely forgot that everyone needs to be able to take care of themselves when they're adults.
Well, you know, as I suspect, and I have no evidence, I have no evidence on me, that it's not by accident in terms of our society, it's somewhat intentional.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the whole reason for PUG. It's mm-hmm. supposed to fill in the gaps of what the system did not tell you, mm-hmm. right? Like, they kept us in willful ignorance.
Yeah, indeed. Willful ignorance.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Douglas Soy of the Portland Underground Graduate School, who I think I've read in either the announcement about this course or elsewhere that a little bio on your statement and
yeah.
How does it go? You receive financial freedom at 62 so you can retire at 65, but how does that go, you know, the one I'm speaking of?
I hit financial freedom 3 years ago, and that's actually when I started PUGs. Uh-huh. Well, I actually started PUGs as sort of a community project before I retired. I got laid off 3 years ago, and then when I looked at my finances, I realized I just didn't need to make any more money. And so the story is that, when I was 22 years old, I graduated from college, and the first job I got was at the Justice Department in Washington, D.C., and I made $25,000 a year, and I spent $15,000. But I felt rich because when I was in college, I spent $5,000. I was an immigrant kid. I didn't have much money, and I didn't have any money. In current terminology, I was actually a dreamer, I think. I was not a documented alien. Anyways, I spent $5,000 a year in college, and so when I spent $15,000 a year at my first job, I felt so wealthy because I had literally tripled my consumption. Uh-huh. And so I decided that I was just going to draw the line there. No matter how much money I made, I was only going to spend $15,000 a year. Uh-huh. And so for the next 20 years, that's all I did. And I went up to $25,000 inflation and also like my raised standard of living. But, you know, I was a lawyer, I was a school teacher, I did nonprofit work here in Portland. And what I did is I just spent $25,000 a year and then saved the rest. And when I got laid off 3 years ago, I realized I had created enough passive income that I didn't need to work anymore. And I could do the things that I wanted creatively.
You said passive income?
Passive income. Yeah. Passive income means like how much money your investments can make for you without having you having to work.
Mm-hmm. And so that's what you define as financial freedom, is that literally you don't have to work?
Or? Yes. Financial freedom is when your passive income, the money that you're making without having to work, hits how much your monthly consumption is. So obviously, the less your monthly consumption is, the less money you need to make monthly in passive income.
Mm-hmm. So you're also talking about investments then, which I think some people, when they think about income, is talk about our hourly wage. And so I need a next job because I'll have a $2 raise in my income. And so we often think of just working until we're used to be until we're 65, and then, you know, if we have a retirement fund and or Social Security, we'll live off of that. It sounds as if you're talking about being much more intentional, and perhaps for some of our listener, the ideas of investments is scary or even satanic or wrong or evil. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think those are valid opinions. I think the idea of investing in the stock market, someone could easily say that there are so many moral problems with that they don't want to do it. But the idea that you should only make money from your labor, quite frankly, I mean, if you say that out loud, you realize the implications in a society, and that, I mean, essentially labor is commoditized.
Yes.
So the only way you make money is by being commodity. I think that's super dangerous. So one of the things we talk about in our class is socially responsible investing, which I think has its own problems, or the greatest thing you can do, both financially and ethically, is invest in yourself and create your own business, because then you get to choose how to do it. But the idea is that at some point you have to create a business that doesn't rely on your labor solely, because then you're still stuck. Just in terms of simple economics, because labor is a commodity, you're only going to make enough to get by. So you have to find a way that you own some sort of some business or piece of capital that actually generates income for you outside of your own labor, or you're going to be stuck working forever.
And forever, I think in our society recently, you know, we've seen in the last 35 years, the time you think you might retire, I mean, that time extends because people certainly don't have enough investment. What investment they might have thought they had either dried up, it just becomes much more difficult. And so I think, unlike previous generation or generation before, the post-World War II generation, where the idea was you work, you have a good job, 20 years, you have a nice pension, and then you're able to retire to support yourself in a good enough lifestyle. That certainly has changed for many in our society in terms of what it means to work and what it means to survive. We're speaking with Douglas Tsoi of the Portland Underground Graduate School, and we want to invite you to call and participate. If you have a question for Douglas, our phone numbers are 503-231-8187. And let's go to a caller. Good morning, Rod.
Hey, good morning. I have about two or three questions.
Great. Go ahead.
I like what I've been hearing about folks, and I appreciate the independence and creativity that you expressed, Doug. Let me ask you about your status. Is it not for profit, or is it a profit organization? Number one.
Sure. Rod, I'll answer that really quickly. We are, well, putatively a for-profit, but we don't make that much money. But we're not a nonprofit because I wanted to be able to move quickly and respond quickly without having a lot of infrastructure and bureaucracy that the IRS demands.
Great. And the second thing follows. Do you have a board?
We do not have a board.
For the same reason.
Exactly.
Excellent. And then how do you deal with accreditation issues? I mean, I like it that you're independent and creative and non-institutional. So when somebody gets a certificate...
We don't offer any accreditation. We may be looking into some sort of CLE credits for lawyers who want to take social justice courses. But once you get into accreditation, that creates a lot of bureaucracy and labor, and we run super lean. We I have a fantastic operations manager at 10 hours a week and a fantastic coordinator at 10 hours a week. So this is running on 20 hours of labor to offer 6 courses a month. Our primary goal is to offer education that improves people's lives at as low a cost as possible. And accreditation is not what most people want out of lifelong learning.
Right. There's a higher value.
Yeah. We do offer, and it's just our cute own thing, called the UGMA, the Underground Masters. If you take 6 courses in a subject area, we'll give you a fake credential, and I have to say fake because the state of Oregon actually came down on me for not being an accredited institution offering, quote, a master's. So it's an underground master's, and it's not a real master's.
Do you get any problems now that it's not a real master's?
Well, I assume that everyone knows that this is not something that accredits you to do anything other than identifies you as someone as a lifelong learner.
Okay.
Hey, thank you so much, hope you investigate more, and there might be opportunities for you to participate with folks.
Yes, Rod, come to class and bring a friend, and you get 20% off. Hope to see you in class.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. So, one of his questions in terms of accreditation and whether or not, you know, what type of institution you are, and you were very specific when you stated that we are an underground graduate school, and the purpose is that I got is the purpose is what you get out of it, and it isn't necessarily that you get a slip of paper that say this or that. But in terms of learning, you do get something. I mean, it isn't something that you can you can hang your fake masters on the wall. But it is what you would, I imagine what you get out of the courses are things that you can use in your life and in your work and stuff like that.
Right, exactly. Like, I just read a statistic that the average person, college graduate, graduates with $60,000 of debt.
Yes.
And the number is actually much higher for people of color.
Yes.
Because systemic wealth disparity, like, you know, people of color have been robbed of wealth for generations. And so they don't have intergenerational wealth to get education. So they actually get on much, much more debt to get the same education. And then their prospects for jobs are actually much lower. Like for an African-American, having a college degree creates the same opportunities as being a white person with a high school degree. So everything is stacked against people of color in the education system. And so that's another reason PUGS is as cheap as possible. And we have our radical pricing policy. We just want people to be able to learn for their lives without having to go into debt.
And I suspect, and I acknowledge that philosophy is not only radical, but it's very basic to an understanding of what the purpose of education is for. It's a notion that we learn because we learn, and we share what we learn and pass on to those following us. I mean, I have no idea. I mean, I never thought of reflecting on the value of that course I took in second year in college on French existentialist thinkers. I mean, it is a it's valuable, and I use it, but what's the dollar sign to it? I mean, I have a degree, but I don't know. I'm in existential angst right now. After you went on that whole thing about the course and the debt of college and graduate school, and saying, oh no.
Well, I mean, Cecil, one of the things that I talk about or I think about is this, it's this idea that education is to culture what sex and genes are to reproduction. Like, it's the only way we pass things on. So, like, when you talk about reproduction, like, people reproduce through sex and genes, right? Education and learning is the only way we pass on knowledge to other people and to future generations. And so, if that's all controlled and mediated through the system, that's super, super dangerous. Mm. I mean, dangerous is not even the right word. Right. And so, to me, it's only natural. You know, you use the word radical, and to me, I guess I would say it's radical, but it's only radical because how screwed up our system is. Like, this is the most natural way for a community to teach itself, that anyone can offer a course and then anyone can take it. We just have a super structured and unnatural way of educating ourselves, and we think that's the way it's supposed to be, and it's not the way it should be.
Hmm. We're speaking with the founder and one of the teachers of Portland Underground Graduate School, Douglas Soy, and we've been talking a lot about the course that will be offered in February on Financial Freedom 1.
Yes.
It's an online course. You can register on portlandpdx.com and
pugspdx.com.
Pugs, what is it? Okay. Delete what I ever just said. But you also teach another course, and I just want to also mention that, and because it caught my attention in terms of how to apologize. What is that about?
Sure, yes. I'm actually teaching two in-person workshops in February, how to apologize and how to teach. How to apologize, I mean, apologies have been super prominent in the news in the last few months, and we've seen, you know, a lot of evidence of people doing it poorly. And so this workshop, which is 2.5 hours long, is simply like, what makes a good apology? And thinking about that, and then actually thinking about who's someone you really want to apologize to, and crafting that apology. And the basic problem with most apologies, I mean, the worst apologies are, I apologize if anyone was offended. Yeah. You hear that all the time, right? Like, there is no recognition of fault or empathy or anything. It's I'm sorry if you're mad at me, but I didn't do anything wrong on some level. And there are... Yeah, I mean, I think there are legal liability issues that cause people to say that, are political liability issues that cause people to say it, but it's not a real apology. And then, you know, there's the lukewarm apology, which is, I'm sorry I did that. And that's, I feel like, minimal, but not wonderful. Like, I don't think it heals the wound. And the principal idea behind the How to Apologize workshop is that a good apology can heal relationships and functionally can heal society. So we talk about what a good apology is, and a good apology fundamentally is it's about truth and empathy. It's not about the deed, but it's about understanding the other person and showing that you know what the other person felt because of whatever action that you're apologizing for.
And that certainly in our society we have witnessed and heard much in terms of how coarse our language and our interaction on intimate and social level have become, how acceptable it is, and so maybe more than ever, or we need to at least look back on how we interact with one another, both in intimate circles and socially. So that might be a workshop people might want to participate in. When is that held?
It's February 3rd, which is a Saturday.
Okay.
You know, it's around noontime. But yeah, the basic idea is a bad apology is when, like, you haven't really apologized. An okay apology is when you make it about what you did. Yes. And a good apology is when you make it about how the other person felt. It's about empathy and stepping out of your self-centeredness to what the other person experienced.
Give us a call, and Douglas would enjoy your conversation, your thoughts and questions. 503-231-8187, and let's go to our next caller. Good morning, Ryan.
Oh, hi. Yeah, this is Brian.
Brian.
Hi, good morning. Interesting conversation. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to hear all of it. I wanted just a couple questions to know if your guest had ever read Your Money or Your Life, a popular book from about 20 years ago written by Vicki Robin and Joe Dominguez, and it sounds like you are kind of a poster child for what they were advocating in their book.
Yes, Your Money, Your Life. We actually just did a free workshop for Financial Freedom alumni on Saturday where we did some of the charting and the calculations from Your Money, Your Life. Like the great exercise from Your Money, Your Life is calculating your real hourly wage, and we did that on Saturday. Your real hourly wage is, everyone knows, most people know what their nominal hourly wage is. Like, oh, I make $20 an hour or $30 an hour. Let's just use the example of $30 an hour. But then you start subtracting a bunch of stuff. Like, you have to add in the hours you commute. You have to add in the costuming costs, which are essentially clothes that you buy that you wouldn't have bought other than you have to have a job. You have to, like, think about all the things you do to decompress from work, and you subtract all that, and then on top of that, you subtract 42% for taxes, 25% from the Fed, 8% from the state, and then any local taxes, and that's 42%. And when you calculate all that stuff and you calculate your real hourly wage, it's usually between a third to half of what you think you're making. So if you think you're making $30 an hour, you're actually making $10 to $15 an hour. And so when you go out to eat or you buy, you know, a shirt, calculate that in terms of your life energy. Like, if I go and buy a $45 shirt and my real wage was $15 an hour, it's three extra hours of your life that you have to give to the system.
Hmm.
And so that's the idea behind your money, your life.
Yeah, that's so good that you wake people up to those expenses that they don't think about. I'm a business owner. I have a small farm my wife and I run. But you had said something earlier about having your own business is the only way to make more, to do something other than just working for a wage. And our expense, at least in the agricultural world, is that everyone else on the operation makes far more than we do. So that hasn't been exactly our experience. And I was wondering, just because if you are making money other than what you are out of the fruits of your own labors, doesn't it have to be coming because it's, you're taking wealth from someone else or from fossil fuels maybe or something? My experience is there's not a whole lot more unless you're willing to lower your values sometimes, you know, like you were talking about in investments, and some people have problems with that. It seems like if you're making money other than what the sweat of your brow, somebody else is paying for it or the planet is paying for it.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And there is tons of investing and creating businesses that might be morally dubious, but you're a farmer. You are providing a service to the community that is needed, right? And
well, that's why I do it.
Yeah, so it's an exchange of value. Like Pugs is what I do, and it's an exchange of value. I feel like I'm giving far more to the community than I'm taking from it.
Right. So you see value in things other than money in your pocket. So that's the value you're getting back.
Yes, but interestingly enough, you know, we live in a capitalist society. Things I've realized is money is fuel as well, right. And people. Who have money scripts that avoid money get in trouble because, like, you need fuel for your own life and you need fuel for your organization. Like, if we did Pugs for free, people actually wouldn't commit to it. They would like the idea more, but they wouldn't come to class, they wouldn't do the reading, they wouldn't contribute as much. Unfortunately, in this society, money is an account of value, so the when people pay for it, they value it more.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I see what you're saying. Well, thank you for what you're doing. I'm really intrigued, and I'm going to look more into your program.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for your call.
Thank you, Brian. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO, your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott, and coming up at 9 is the Old Mo Variety Hour. Interviews Larry Kleinman on immigration, a discussion on the temporary blocking of the deportation of dreamers, and a review of the film I, Tanya. At 10 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein talks to Oregon State Representative Karen Power and Meredith Connolly of Solutions Oregon about the future of the Clean Energy Jobs Bill. At 11, Making Context presents Juan Gonzalez and his new book, Reclaiming Gotham, where he chronicles the evolution of growth machines in America's city. At 11:30, Voices for the Animals talks to the owner of Fido's Tap House, the world's first dog tap room. KBOO keeps you informed, and you can get informed. So go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member. We're speaking with Douglas Soy of Portland Underground Graduate School. And if you're interested in participating and taking one of their February courses, go to pugspdx.com and look at the lineup. Intriguing, interesting lineup, something for everyone. And Douglas, you also mentioned another course, workshop you participate in or part teaching in February, and that's How to Teach. Who is... who are you directing that course for, and who should think about it?
Yeah, that is a Pugs at Work workshop. So it's held during the workday, February 6th. And the idea is that course is for anyone who does any sort of transferring knowledge at the workplace, which is most people. But again, you know, if teaching is the only way we pass on culture and knowledge, that's basically almost all the value of any organization. So if you work in an organization, you work with other people, and you need to communicate and pass on knowledge, this is the workshop for you, because so many people of us have to share knowledge, but almost no one has any background in pedagogical theory. They think, like, if I tell someone that, they know it. And that's just functionally not true. That's not the way our brains work. So we go into brain learning and what it takes to help someone learn, as opposed to for you just to instruct.
Wow. And again, that takes place on which day in February?
February 6th. During the day.
During the day.
Yeah. Great. So get your employers to pay for it, and for them to give you the time to take it.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. I wanted to I just thought a little bit more about what Brian was talking about.
Yes.
Like, for example, a lot of my passive income comes from rent. Mm-hmm. Right. I own my house, and I rent out the extra rooms, and it helps pay all my bills. I actually think that's a pretty fair way to make money. I took the money that I saved from not consuming previously, and then I'm providing housing for other people. And in theory, I could provide for free, but we don't live in a system where you provide things for free after you've saved from your own consumption. And so I feel like rentals, as long as you're not charging too much, you're charging a fair price, is a pretty fair way to create passive income for yourself.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would also add another interesting idea is when you owe money to this, debt is being, is owing, right? Literally. But that actually means that you're being owned. And in radical circles, they call it wage slavery. I think slavery is just way too loaded, of a term. But, literally when you owe, either for your mortgage or for college debt, or the far worse is, consumer debt. The average American has $29,000 worth of auto loan debt, which I find astounding. But if you owe money, like $29,000 worth of auto debt, that means someone else owns you.
Yes.
Owns hours of your life. And to me, I'm absolutely allergic to other people owning hours of my life.
I don't want to say like, but I appreciate the way your observation of that in terms of owning one's life and hours of one's life, and the lack of freedom or the ability to move, to be hammered down by limitations that you have no control over.
Yeah, I mean, that's the idea of financial freedom, right? Own every hour of your life.
Every hour, not 20 hours, but all 24.
Right, like think about how many waking hours you actually own of your own life when you owe money to the system. And like when you have financial freedom, every hour is yours.
Every hour. So if you like to own every hour, check out Portland Underground Graduate School, PUGS.
PUGSPDX.com.
PUGSPDX.com.
And the next cohort of Financial Freedom 1 is online from February 1st to March 31st.
Great. Let's go to, I believe, Barry's online.
Yes, hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. You know, I love the concept of forever learning. I'm an elderly person, and I've taken that path myself. But I listened to the show, and I heard one statement that was mentioned, and the words were investor income. I think that's a lovely way of saying complete capitalism. So in a sense, what I'm hearing being professed is unless you own your own business, if you're working for wages, you're a slave, you're a commodity, was to quote what was being said. So it seems that this man is advocating a real stratification of the haves, those who run the show and earn money through other people's labor and capitalizes on it. And what is the difference relative to the situation we find ourselves in with the total stratification of the haves, the have-nots, the working class, and the ownership class? It seems we're putting a lovely spin on that aspect, I mean, and kind of conflating it with learning forever. And it has a quality that's kind of disturbing to me.
Okay, thank
Perhaps
you.
Perhaps your speaker could comment on that.
Excellent question.
Thanks, Barry, and I really appreciate your perspective. I mean, my perspective is, in terms of social stratification of the haves and have-nots, my point is that I want everyone to be a have. Like, if everyone owned their own labor as opposed to other people owning their labor, I think that's actually far more equitable. You know, I think the origins of capitalism were not big businesses, but, you know, Adam Smith was writing about a community of small businesses that flowed together. And I think that's actually probably the most equitable type of economy there is. Any thoughts on that, Barry?
No, it doesn't, because you even reflected just in the last few minutes about rental properties. There's an ownership class, and you seem to be proposing the ownership class for all, and that's just not a reality. There's opportunities. Many differences, and it's like almost condemning anyone who earns their money through wages. And not and where do you get workers? And if there's a worker working for wages, they're defined by your own definition as a commodity. So your solution to our present condition seems like it perpetuates the present condition and puts a lovely KBU consciousness spin on it.
What do you propose, Barry?
I don't have a solution to the human condition on that level. I think human beings on a philosophical level serve themselves, and they will take advantage when the opportunity arises. We're fighting for some fairness in the wage ownership conflict or reality that we live in, and I don't have a solution, because it's a human solution, not an economic one. And it professes equality where that doesn't exist, because there's an opportunity, racial, education, all inheritance, none of those things are considered relative to this conversation you've been having, and they're all part of being human, and different types of economic structures have been tried, and I don't find a successful one that works with people on the level that you're professing, but so I don't have the solution, but I love your interest in perpetuating learning, but the other aspect of it,
Barry, we're running with. Barry, we're running short on time, but okay. As I'm listening to your conversation, I think, oh, so exciting. I suppose Douglas would be open for people with proposals to look at the economic systems and how we counter capitalism and propose a course that people could, a workshop that people could participate in.
Absolutely, and thank you for your comments, Barry. I would make a distinction between PUGS, which is the idea of lifelong learning, and community educating itself, and anyone can offer their perspectives, and the course that I'm teaching about financial freedom. And, you know, the idea is that we have a multitude of perspectives when the community educates itself, and that is my particular perspective on the education system, or on the financial system. But with PUGS, there are dozens of different instructors with different perspectives.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
I appreciate what you're doing. It was just that aspect of investor income.
We have to go, Douglas. Thank you. So, thank you
very much.
Thank you, Barry. You've been listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO. I'm Cecil Prescott. Thank you, Douglas, from PUGS PDX for joining us this morning.
Yes, come to PUGS. Come to class.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Spontaneous Combustion New Music Festival, happening January 19th through February 10th at the Old Church in Portland. The Spontaneous Combustion New Music Festival